From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Welcome to the Wildcast podcast. I'm Star Sports Editor Ryan Finley here with Michael Lev. Michael, it's football season. It's August 1st, but it's football season. A week ago, you were in Los Angeles for Pac-12 Media Day.
I was.
The unofficial start to the football season. Khalil Tate was there. Kevin Sumlin was there. Both were talking about a Bleacher Report story that indicated that Khalil Tate hired Kevin Sumlin somehow. Before we get too far along here, what do you make of this whole thing?
Fascinating story. It's something that we had theorized about a long time ago. And it's just something that never got around to asking, which I kind of blame myself. I probably had a couple of opportunities to do that, and it's never really had the right moment. But what Bleacher Report did was, you know, they attempted to connect the dots, right? That right around mid-early January, you know, we started hearing very well-sourced, because we weren't, you know, we were not putting anything out there, anything speculative about the coaching search. We heard Ken Niumatalolo had become the front-runner, right? So we finally decided, hey, you know, at this point, we're going to put that out there.
Right. He went from Phoenix back to the Naval Academy with an offer in hand, was going to meet with his staff and discuss the job. Right.
Now, whether there was ever technically an offer is, I think, an issue of semantics. Ryan and I both just did air quotes right there for the benefit of our listeners. But anyway, so, you know, on a Thursday night, I think, of that week, Khalil's sitting courtside with President Robbins at the basketball game. Friday, Khalil tweets, "I didn't come here to run the triple option."
Right.
Saturday, you know, the Niumatalolo thing is really gaining traction, but even though he seems to be interested in Arizona, and Arizona seems to be interested in him, it doesn't happen. Then by Sunday, he drops out. Kevin Sumlin all of a sudden becomes the choice.
Right, by Sunday afternoon.
So, I mean, when you look at that sequence of events and you realize the unique position Khalil Tate is in, okay? You know better than I. Has Arizona ever had, like, a legitimate Heisman Trophy candidate coming into a season? Like, maybe Kadeem Carey?
Maybe, maybe.
But he wasn't a quarterback?
Nope, he wasn't a quarterback. And what Arizona ran wasn't contingent on Kadeem Carey, right? Like, a bell cow running back is a bell cow running back, regardless of what offense you run. It's interesting. My theory to you on this, Michael, and we've shared this in private last week, when Dave Hickey comes out and says, "That wasn't the way things went down. I hired the guy who I wanted to hire. I'm the AD, damn it," basically is what he says. I believe every word of that. I don't believe Dave Hickey was pushed by Khalil Tate to hire Kevin Sumlin. I believe that Khalil Tate's influence was with the president, who is, among many other things, a diehard college football fan.
Yep.
A native Texan, or not a native Texan, a Texas resident at the time Kevin Sumlin was a very big deal.
Yep.
In good with the quarterback who doesn't want to play for Ken Niumatalolo. I think whatever influence Khalil Tate peddled, he peddled it to the university president and not the AD.
Right. And then maybe President Robbins goes to Dave Hickey. "You know, I'm kind of hearing from Khalil and some other guys that maybe this isn't the direction we should go.
Right.
Obviously, it's up to you to make the call, but I just thought I would, you know, pass that information along." And they're giving me a little bit of, you know, I'm feeling hesitant about it a little bit.
And
again, this is, we're not quoting anybody.
No.
We are just theorizing.
And maybe he goes, "Hey, maybe we should double back to someone, right? Maybe we should try his agent one more time." I still think that there was a real belief as they were trying to hire a head coach that Kevin Sumlin might have been out of their price range. Right?
That's possible.
The deal that he ended up signing is the most, to use a baseball term, club-friendly deal in sports. I mean, I think it's $2 million this year and $2.5 million next year or something like that. They signed him to a very club-friendly deal. But maybe that's when Robbins went, "Well, let's try him and see." Arguing over why they hired the guy they hired is probably missing the point as we enter training camp here, but My goodness, that Bleacher Report story. I guess my question for you is, does that paint Arizona in any sort of a light, good or bad, do you think?
I think some people tried to spin it that way. They tried to spin it as Dave Hickey doesn't have as much power as other athletic directors, and
right.
he was undermined in this whole process. I'm not really sure that's the case. I mean, they tried to spin it as, we listen to our student athletes, and that's one of the great parts about Arizona, is they can have some input. But the way Hickey described it to me was, I mean, that's one part of the equation.
Sure.
And there are many, many parts to that equation that add to a decision. Let's play this out, though, in an alternate universe.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say that they did hire Kenny Amatalolo.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say that Khalil Tate decided to transfer.
Right.
How bad of a look would that have been for Arizona, given that he was the big breakout star of college football last year, comes into this year with all this, Heisman hype. He's kind of like, the team's success is contingent upon his health and improvement. That would have been a really bad look.
Ever happened in sports, though? I mean, I think that it would have, that this is, if he didn't want to run the triple option, guess what? He wasn't going to run the triple option regardless of who the coach was. I think Ken Niumatalolo would have come in and in the course of an afternoon said, this is what we're doing. And Khalil Tate probably would have said, great. Looks a lot like what I already run.
Probably.
Great.
But maybe Arizona's administration decided that that was a risk they couldn't afford to take. Again, because this is a unique point in time.
Mm-hmm.
A unique athlete, a position that Arizona's never been in.
Right.
And all of a sudden, all that positive momentum you had going just kind of gets halted if he decides to transfer, or it becomes this situation. Maybe other players decide to transfer, which, again, I don't think that would have happened. I agree with you. I think Ken would have come in here and he would have won them over. But maybe they just felt like that was too big of a risk. Maybe they kept the lines of communication open with someone's people, and they decided to shift gears on that one weekend.
You know what my big takeaway from that Bleacher Report story is? And if you haven't read it, go read it.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting, illuminating, shall we say. To me, what's interesting is Kevin Sumlin wouldn't really participate in the story. Robert Robbins, happy to talk about the influence that the quarterback had over the hire. Khalil Tate, happy to talk about the influence he had on the hire. He is thumping his chest going, I did that. Dave Hickey would not comment. Kevin Sumlin would not comment, which takes us to our next topic of conversation. I think that there is a communication issue with Kevin Sumlin already. He attempted basically to close spring football to the media and to outsiders. He succeeded partly, some intervention by us and the athletic director and some other people sort of changed the tenor of it at least.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end, someone talked and Khalil Tate talked and it was a whole thing. Training camp, though, starts here on Friday. You'll get Kevin Sumlin Friday and then again a week from Friday or something like that.
Following
Saturday. Kevin Sumlin isn't really talking to the media much. Khalil Tate is not on the list of players scheduled to speak over the first at least 9 days of camp. Is there something up here? Does my spidey sense tingles a little bit here? Where you go, wait a minute. You got a brand new coach and you're trying to sell football tickets and he's not talking. You have a Heisman candidate quarterback and he's not talking. I mean, is this just Kevin Sumlin trying to control the situation, or something up, do you think?
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack here.
Mm-hmm.
I think mostly it's Kevin and the university trying to control the message, which is just something that's been happening increasingly across all of college sports, kind of in conjunction with the rise of social media, teams having their own websites, schools having their own websites, having their own quote-unquote reporters.
Yeah, I just did the air quotes
when
you said reporters.
But what's weird about this is usually, and Kevin Sumlin's hardly unusual in the sense of being a control freak, because just about every single coach is that way.
The good ones. The good ones are.
Usually they want to be the singular voice, or they want to have the final say or the official word on everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he's kind of okay with being in the background at times, which I find fascinating. And I don't fully understand why. I don't think there's anything nefarious in play. Maybe he just, maybe he just kind of got burned out or felt like he was betrayed in some way by everything that happened to him at Texas A&M, and he just doesn't want to be involved in that stuff on a daily basis.
Right.
But that's the weird part of this to me. It's like, on the one hand, you want to control the message. On the other hand, you're letting other people speak on your behalf.
And being one of the, two highest paid employees on campus, one of the five highest paid employees in the state, I think comes with certain responsibilities. Now, easy for me to say, right? I'm the sports editor.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it comes with some responsibilities, especially if the health of the athletic department is tied to one thing, Michael Lev. It's not winning football games. It's tied to selling football tickets. If they're trying to pack Arizona Stadium, I think there are some concerning signs early about an inability to pack Arizona Stadium. If they're trying to pack it, you need your football coach out in front, telling stories, getting people out there. I think being actively involved in Arizona football, in his program. To me, when you don't talk to the media or when you announce that you're going to be talking once a week and when you take an active back seat, I just can't imagine that there are many people happy in McHale Center with that decision.
And it's not just us either.
No.
Our colleagues who work for television and radio stations are not going to get the sound bites that would run on the 10 o'clock news. Now, you might say, well, you know, the 10 o'clock news, that's like totally irrelevant now. No one cares about local sports. Well, there are a lot of people who live in Tucson who probably do watch that segment just to get their little bit of Arizona Wildcats news. And you're just not going to see Kevin Sumlin promoting the program.
Mm-hmm.
They, on the other hand, might feel like we don't need any of that. We can do this ourselves. We have our own
social media team.
We have our own video crew out there. We have our own social media team.
Right.
You know, we're going to run these cut-ups from every single practice with some weird music in the background and slow motion of
feet chopping.
Like running through pads. They did a pretty cool mic'd up series.
Right.
That kind of ran in conjunction with the assistant coach availability last year. I mean, that was a valuable tool.
Huh.
But if you're talking about reaching the broader Tucson audience and getting people to come to the stadium, of course, it makes sense to try to promote your product as much as possible. And this doesn't really jibe with that.
No. And I think Kevin Sumlin and this staff, to their credit, and I wouldn't say this about Rich Rodriguez, I think they've done a good job of making this team and this coach look appealing to 16-year-old kids.
Sure.
The mic'd up stuff, the social media stuff, I mean, we saw today, they're posting, recruits are posting screen grabs of offer sheets that they're receiving from Arizona, and frankly, it looks really cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. I think recruiting is very important. Winning is very important. But the fact is, the people who you're trying to get into Arizona Stadium on Saturdays, they live in Tucson, they have money to spend, and are sports fans. And those are the people who, and if I can beat my chest a little bit here, read the Daily Star, watch the 10 o'clock news, listen to Drive Time Radio on the way home, right? These people, I think, are the people who you need to attract to buy season tickets. I mean, one of the great sadnesses, that's not a word, in Tucson sports, they averaged more per game at Arizona Stadium 20 years ago than they do now. Tucson was half the size it is now. Twice as many people, fewer people in seats. Now, there are a myriad reasons for that, television, the whole nine yards, of course. But if you're trying to sell tickets, and if you're trying to fill the stadium, because the health of the track team and the swim team depends entirely on how many football tickets you sell. If you're trying to do that, I don't know why you would keep sort of the media and by extension the public at an arm's length.
Right, right. And it's not a unique to Arizona problem,
the
declining attendance.
No.
I mean, we've all seen and read these stories
sure.
about all of the reasons that this could be happening, whether it's just the convenience factor,
right.
ticket prices, Wi-Fi, better, it's so much, better and easier and more comfortable to watch from home, etc. I'm sure they're hoping that the improvements they're making to the stadium will help. And I'm sure they're also banking on winning, you know, that like nothing will bring the crowds in quite like, you know, if you're a winning football team. Like, I definitely feel like if they are able to go through the first four games undefeated with USC coming in on September 29th, that game will be a sellout and that place will be rocking in a way that it hasn't in quite some time. Can I just say one more thing about the media policy situation? It's not exactly what we would want,
right?
We can acknowledge that. We would prefer to be able to make requests for which players and coaches we would want to talk to.
Sure.
We would like to talk to the head coach every day,
of course,
if at all possible. All that being said, it's better than it was in spring. And I feel like, you know, at this point, we're just going to try to make the best of the situation.
Yeah.
Provide the best possible coverage that we can.
Well, and here's the thing, too. Somebody like Kevin Sumlin, if he was burned if he thinks he was burned by the media at Texas A&M, naturally he's going to be a little, I think, cautious with us. We don't bite. I mean, we ask tough questions. I mean, you ask Rich Rodriguez all the time about injuries. That's
or
your
suspended players or guys who are arrested.
Right. That's your job.
Right.
We don't bite as a group, I don't think. And my guess is in time he'll find that this is not, for better and worse, Texas A&M, right? I think on one hand, I mean, Texas A&M, the stadium filled itself, right?
Yep.
I think in Arizona, Kevin Sumlin will find that he will probably have to do a little bit more than just win games to fill seats. As an aside, by the way, Dave Hickey is a baseball guy, as we all know.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see that I think Arizona has borrowed a lot from baseball as they tout these new changes to Arizona Stadium. I think we're seeing, I mean, first of all, beer sales.
Sure.
They're selling beer. Second of all, I think you're seeing more local food. I mean, if you've been to a Diamondbacks game lately or a Dodgers game, Angels game, a Padre game, just Giants game, baseball has become about showcasing the local, right? It's all, you can go to a Diamondbacks, you can get a World Canelo hot dog at a Diamondbacks game. You'll spend $9 for it, but you can get one. I like that Dave Hickey in Arizona seems to be emphasizing Tucson as they try to make the game experience better.
Sure.
There's going to be more of the band, less out of the speakers. I think that you're going to see more local food, local beer, et cetera, et cetera. In that regard, I think it's a real step forward.
Yeah, and I'm sure the stadium will be nicer and more user-friendly. And whatever they're doing right now... that's only half of it.
Right.
Because they're going to work on the other side of the stadium, I think, you know, in the next offseason of phase two of this project. Plus, the indoor facility, I think, is going to be a boon, not only for the players, but it's going to be a great asset on game days because they're going to be able to host, like, tailgates in there.
Air conditioning.
Air conditioning, right?
Yep.
Which is a huge, huge deal. Everyone complains about the late start times. No one... As anyone who knows me knows, that's like kind of the only thing I ever complain about is the late start times. But there's really no choice living where we live early in the season. And if people want to come out, you know, earlier in the day, the tailgate or whatever, I mean, it can be unbearable. Having that facility right next door where you can drink and eat, and listen to music or whatever, and then you just walk right across the street to the stadium, I think that'll help.
Somebody I know who works down there posited this theory about the practice facility. That practice facility will become sort of the hub of activity for recruiting visits and off-season things when people come in, right? As a result, they're not going to be leaning so heavily on Arizona Stadium all the time. I think that, in a way, once they get that thing built, there won't be nearly the emphasis on AstroTurf at Arizona Stadium. It won't need to look game-ready all the time like it has to now, because if it's January the 5th and you're a kid visiting, you want to see a field ready to go. It will have some element of their history in the new indoor practice facility, so I think you don't necessarily have to trot all of that out. To me, it'll be interesting to see how the sort of the building and integration of that practice facility affects what they deem to be their priorities at Arizona Stadium.
Right. No, I can totally see that being the case. I mean, obviously, Lowell Stevens is still relatively new and shiny and very nice building and facility, but it is essentially attached to the stadium itself.
Right.
And this gives you something that's even newer,
mm-hmm.
Sort of is kind of representative of their vision for, you know, taking the program into the next century, that kind of thing. And, of course, they're going to be paying for it into the next century.
Into the next century. Michael,
assuming college football still exists a century from now, but that's another topic for another time.
You bring up a century. So this is your – I was trying to figure this out since we've been talking.
Yeah.
How many head football coaches have you covered? College. College head football.
In college. Okay. I started out with Pete Carroll.
Okay. Well, hold on. Did you cover Northwestern at all when you were in school?
If you want to go back to that.
Yeah.
I only had one head coach when I was covering football, Francis Pay.
I don't know who that is.
You don't know who that is. Okay. Gary Barnett came in right after I left.
Okay.
So there's one.
Okay.
Pete Carroll would be two. Lane Kiffin, three. Steve Sarkisian, four.
Mm-hmm.
Clay Helton on an interim basis. That would be five.
Because he was hired as their full-time coach like the week you got here, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Just about. And Rich Rod would be six,
mm-hmm.
and Kevin Sumlin would be seven, I guess. So,
not to ask you to generalize,
yeah.
but those are a bunch of guys who could not be more different from each other pretty much all the way across the board.
True.
Knowing what you've gathered from the previous coaches you've covered, what do you anticipate out of Sumlin?
Who, from a media interaction standpoint or from just a general success?
Maybe public interaction, personality standpoint. How about that?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, when you talk to him, sit down with him, meet with him, he's super friendly.
Right.
He loves to make jokes. Like,
right.
He gets disappointed when you don't laugh at his jokes.
Oh, that's funny.
You know, like, he's, like, one of those guys. He's got, like, a very infectious laugh.
Uh-huh.
You know, and, like, he's like, come on. Sometimes he'll be like, come on, guys, you know,
yeah.
I'm trying to kid around here. And so I can totally see why recruits and their families
mm-hmm.
are drawn to this guy. Because
right.
he's very charismatic,
mm-hmm.
you know? You mentioned all those different coaches that I've covered, and I think the thing that stands out to me is that there are any number of ways to go about this.
Right.
We all have our opinions about what the best way is.
Mm-hmm.
I would probably cite Pete Carroll as the model for how to run a college football program.
Right.
When I interviewed President Robbins recently, he mm-hmm. kind of reminded me of Pete in a way, in that he was just, like, super enthused
right.
about everything.
Right.
So I can envision Pete, when he was at USC, just, like, bumping into someone on campus and just striking up a conversation.
Right.
I can envision President Robbins doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the most successful coach, or coaches, in college football, say Nick Saban, Urban Meyer,
mm-hmm.
Jim Harbaugh, they're prickly.
Right. Yeah. Right.
I mean, they're not warm and fuzzy. They're not super media friendly, but they're super successful.
Right.
And
I would say
Pete Carroll, the complete opposite, extremely successful. Bill Belichick, the most successful coach maybe in NFL history, gives like the worst press conferences.
And in the case of Harbaugh and Saban, people have taken their prickliness because they win games.
Yeah,
Harbaugh doesn't win enough games, but because they win games, their prickliness is cute.
Yeah, right.
Their prickliness is quirky.
Right.
You know, Bill Belichick is a quirky fella because he wins 80% of his games. If this were Bill Belichick, the security guard at the Arizona Daily Star, he'd last about 5 seconds, right? You're right, though. There are so many ways to skin a cat in football. I'm just really curious to see sort of where in the community and as a personality Kevin Sumlin falls on that continuum. You know, Rich Rodriguez, for all the criticisms of him, I thought that he genuinely enjoyed being a head coach. I think he enjoyed being maybe lowercase f famous. He liked kissing babies and shaking hands, especially at first.
Yeah,
first.
What I don't know about him is how much, you know, genuine off-the-field interaction he had with the players.
Right. I'm not sure
you
there
know,
was much.
He might have been, you know, just based on his personality, just kind of a little more isolated.
Mm-hmm.
And I get the feeling that Kevin Sumlin's not gonna be that way.
Mm-hmm.
He is going to interact
mm-hmm.
with the players a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
I've brought this up many times, but like one of his like go-to words that he just always emphasizes is relationships.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I feel like he's going to be a good relationship builder with the players.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether he's also a relationship builder with the community at large kind of remains to be seen.
Sure. It's It's interesting. I felt like Rich Rodriguez maybe kept people at an arm's length off the field because of what had happened both at West Virginia and at Michigan. It looks as if Kevin Sumlin met with a similar fate at Texas A&M that Rich Rodriguez met with at Michigan. I hope Kevin Sumlin doesn't keep people at such an arm's length because of what happened someplace far away.
Yeah, interesting. It's an interesting theory. It's scar tissue.
Right.
They both brought it here.
Sure.
And you know, you can, it's no, there's no disputing that Kevin Sumlin was successful at A&M, but he still ended up getting fired.
Right.
And a lot of people kind of turned on him at the end there. And it's, I'm sure it's hard for him to just totally let that go, you know? So in that sense, I kind of understand, you know, why he might, as you put it, kind of try to keep some things at arm's length.
It's interesting. Friday, first football practice, really of the Kevin Sumlin era. Yeah. At Arizona Stadium. Michael Lev, thank you, as always, for joining us. I love doing these. These are great.
Of course. Well, let's do some more of them.
Absolutely. Now, there's sports going on now.
There is, yes.
Our long Tucson-wide nightmare is over. There's sporting events being played. That'll do it for this episode of the Wildcast. For Michael Lev, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.